Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pavani, I Eat Green with Pavani on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm so happy to be here today with all of you on this beautiful, beautiful Thursday morning. And I have another great show planned for you all today. But before I get started, I want to talk about some of the things going on in and around our area that you might not want to miss. Coming up this weekend, the Long Island Community Agricultural Network is presenting an organic gardening workshop. And this is a two-hour workshop from 10 to 12 at the St. Hugh's Learning Center. And the teachers who are giving this workshop are longtime organic growers, and they have a wealth of knowledge, and I really encourage people to go. You can find out more information about that on the Long Island Community Agricultural Network website or on my website. Also, there's a composting basics workshop at Stone Barns this weekend. And Stone Barns is up near Tarrytown in Pocantico Hills. And it is a great agricultural center, really wonderful. If you haven't been there, it's really worth going. And they have a huge composting operation. And this workshop certainly will be great. April 3rd through 5th is the Roger Smith Conference on Food. That takes place at the Roger Smith Hotel from 8 to 5. You can find out information on their website. And, of course, the Just Food Conference is right around the corner, April 5th and 6th. This year is up at Columbia's Laurie M. Tisch Center for Food Education and Policy at 125th Street and Broadway. And the Just Food Conference is a great opportunity to meet others who are working towards a sustainable food system in New York. So I encourage people to go check that out. April 12th is a Sustainability Garden Educational Field Day and Community Support Agricultural Fair at Farmingdale State College. And this is our local CSA for Long Island, but there are CSA fairs all around the country that are set up by local, ours is NOFA, Northeast Organic Farming Association, but local farming associations have CSA fairs, and you might be able to find out about them on the website localharvest.org. But anyway, CSA fair is an opportunity to find out what CSAs are in your area. And CSAs, for those that do not know, is a community-supported agriculture where you purchase a share into a farmer's farm so that every week you get a box of what they've harvested that week. And every CSA does it a little different. Some CSAs you go and pick it up at the CSA. Other CSAs have drop-off points close to your home. So and the fair amount that you pay also varies. And also, don't be afraid to ask if they can work out a payment plan for you. I realize for some people it's hard to come up with all of the money up front. You know, it's good for the farmer that way because this is when they need the money to buy the seeds and buy things for the soil, et cetera. But for some of us, it's hard to come up with that much money at once. So some of the farmers are willing to work out a payment plan with you, so don't be afraid to ask about that. May 10th to 11th is Edible Communities publication, Edible Institute. And this is at the New School in Manhattan. It's May 10th and 11th, which is Mother's Day weekend. But they have a great, great lineup of speakers. Mark Bittman is the keynote speaker on May 10th, and Anna Lappe is the keynote speaker on May 11th. You know, lots of great food, drink, and people that are interested in this. Also, May 13th, Michael Pollan is speaking at the 92nd Street Y. If you want to buy tickets for that, you can go onto the 92nd Street Y website. Okay, and those are the things that are coming right up around the corner. I want to share with you some of the things that are in the news this week and also ways that you can take action. Every week I send these out in my newsletter, and if you don't get my newsletter and would like to, please sign up on my website at ieatgreen.com. You know, this week there is, you know, a constant call to awareness about the dangers of transporting oil. Just this past weekend there was a huge spill of 170,000 gallons of oil spilled in the Houston Ship Channel, which is now closed, which is, of course, affecting all the businesses in that area. They don't know when it will reopen. I think there's 24 ships a day working to clean 4,000 barrels worth of oil each day. And, you know, this happens, these spills are happening in the oceans, they're happening on land, there's pipes being broken, there's trains being derailed. I mean, there's just such dangers in the transporting of the oils that it just has to raise our awareness to the need to find some alternative fuel sources, renewable energy. And we need to invest more money in that, and any opportunity you have to encourage that in your town area with your legislators, congressmen, senators, please do not pass up that opportunity. We really need to put more money into finding alternative sources and making them work. I mean, we know many ways. We know we can do solar. We know we can do wind. But unless they invest the money into it, it's not going to happen. Since Fukushima, you know, Germany has pledged to become 100% fossil fuel free and nuclear energy free. And so they are really working to go towards these alternative energies, and we need to do the same. Also, the Oceana report came out recently that talked about how much fish is being caught in bycatch and then thrown back into the waters. I mean, the amount is unbelievable. They estimate approximately 2 billion pounds every year. Think of how many people could eat that, you know, if that wasn't happening. So there are petitions that you can sign to try to keep this from happening and trying to get more regulations in place so that the fishing operations that we have going on right now, which are just so unsustainable, can be put into place and be more adequately monitored. Also, Long Island chefs have signed a pledge to use more New York ingredients, but so have all New York chefs in the state. There's a big push from Governor Cuomo to ask our chefs to purchase and use more local ingredients in their restaurants, and I think that is great. We need to support our local farmers, and every state needs to do the same. However, I would like to also just put a little push in for supporting local, sustainably farming farmers. You know, if something's grown local but it's sprayed with pesticides, it really doesn't turn me on. So I really want the food that I'm getting at restaurants to be of a healthier quality, and if it can be local, that's great. And that brings me to another push that I'm really trying to start. I really want to start a nationwide movement, and you all can help. I want this movement to be that every time any of us go to a restaurant, we question our waiters and waitresses as to where the meat or the fish or even the vegetables come from. If we could do this, it would raise awareness to the restaurateurs that their clients care or their customers care. If you ask, you know, where is this, you know, steak from? Is it from a local farm? Do they raise them humanely? Do they use antibiotics? Do they use hormones? Same for chicken. When it comes to fish, you ask where it's, whether it's wild, whether it's farm-raised, you ask whether it's local. There's so many questions to ask, and if we all start doing this, it will really raise the awareness. I know yesterday I was at a restaurant, and they had red snapper, and red snapper has been on the do-not-eat list for a long time because of overfishing. However, this was a restaurant that was supposed to be using sustainable practices. So when I questioned about the red snapper, they said it was farmed or it was wild, but it was from a sustainable source. And then I went onto the Monterey Bay little app that I have right there, and sure enough, the red snapper has been removed because of all the boycotting that has been going on. It has been removed from the Do Not Eat list, so I was really happy to see that. So anyway, these are things that we all can know. The Monterey Bay Fish app is a great one to have on your phone, on your smartphone. You can look up any fish right there and find out if it's one to eat, if it's one to avoid, if there's better alternatives. It's a great, great little app. So there's also ways, other ways you can take action. We're trying to encourage people to divest from any investments in fossil fuels. And there's a real push to ask Michelle Obama to encourage that as well, to divest, to have New York State divest from fossil fuels and just the whole country. You know, it's a big push, and I don't know whether we can make it happen, but we certainly can make it happen on our local universities and colleges. They have huge, huge investment pools, and they invest a lot in fossil fuel companies. And so 350.org years ago started this movement to divest from fossil fuels, and there's a big push now also in New York State to divest from fossil fuels. And for Michelle Obama, we want to push her to push the labeling of genetically modified foods. She's been such a proponent of improving school lunches and getting kids to move and looking at the childhood diabetes and obesity epidemic. But now, you know, we're really trying to call her to task to really take up the GMO labeling issue, because that is one that we really have to fight for. We all have a right to know what is in our foods. And right now there's such a big push and bad marketing from the Grocery Manufacturers Association and from biotech companies to keep us in the dark. So we need to really push for that. And then also, if we all take a pledge to try to eat less meat, if you are a vegetarian, great, you're already doing your job. But if you're not, and you are a meat eater, if you can take a pledge to eat less meat, that would be really great, because meat consumption is responsible for so many of the greenhouse gas emissions, and we need to cut that back. It's responsible for more than all the cars in this country, so it's really a really serious issue. Before I invite my guest on, who is Brian Hetrick, who is the Greenhouse and Organic Garden Manager at the Hippocrates Institute, and I'm really thrilled to have him on today. But before he comes on, I want to share with you a recipe. This week I made a slow-roasted tempeh brisket-style dish, and my clients that I work for every week are gluten-free, and tempeh was, you know, a dish that I could use for them. I can't use seitan, but now they also are going soy-free. So tempeh and tofu was out of the question. And a friend of mine, Barry's tempeh, he is making buckwheat and brown rice tempeh. He's also making adugi bean tempeh. So we now can buy tempeh and ask your Whole Foods for it. It's being carried in some of the New York Whole Foods, but we certainly could help with distribution if we start requesting it more. But this tempeh is really great. One was buckwheat and one was brown rice tempeh. And it's soy-free and it's gluten-free, and so it's great. So anyway, I first sliced the tempeh into thin slices on the diagonal, about a quarter inch thick. And I roasted them in the oven first on some parchment paper with some olive oil. And I actually put the olive oil on both sides. So I basically put the tempeh down on the cookie sheet with the parchment paper and then turned it over, so I got oil on both sides. And then I baked it in an oven at a 425 oven for about 10 to 15 minutes, just until it's golden brown, and then I took it out. Then I made the sauce, and I did that with one onion chopped, three carrots cut into large chunks, one green pepper chopped, one yellow pepper chopped, two tablespoons of chopped garlic, one large can of fire-roasted tomatoes, a quarter cup of tomato paste, six tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, half a cup of water, a quarter cup of honey, three tablespoons chopped parsley, eight baby potatoes cut in half, a quarter cup of white wine, salt and pepper to taste, and then right at the end I also put on top of the dish, I sprinkled it with two tablespoons of brown sugar flakes. And then I also decided to add a quarter teaspoon of red pepper flakes if you wanted to have a little bit of a spice to it. So I started by sautéing the onions in a saucepan with a little olive oil and one tablespoon of the chopped garlic, and I added the peppers and continued cooking for about 5 more minutes. Then I added the fire-roasted tomatoes, the tomato paste, the vinegar, honey, remaining garlic, parsley, water, and red pepper flakes, and the white wine. And I let that simmer for about 10 minutes. Taste it, add salt and pepper according to your liking. And then I put a cup of the sauce onto the bottom of a 8x11 Pyrex dish. Then I laid out the tempeh into the dish. I added the carrots and the potatoes, and I covered it with the remaining sauce. And I sprinkled it all with a little bit of the brown sugar, and I put it into the oven, and I baked it again for another 40 minutes. And that was it. And it was delicious, and I encourage you all to try it. And as always, I love feedback, so after you make it, shoot me a little email letting me know what you thought, and I'd love that. Okay, so now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Brian Hetrick. He is the Greenhouse and Organic Garden Manager at the Hippocrates Institute, which is a holistic health and wellness center in West Palm Beach, Florida. And as the manager, Brian teaches classes on gardening, juicing, and growing your own living foods, including wheatgrass and sprouts. And Brian came to the Hippocrates Health Institute from Maryland, where he ran a successful private practice as a naturopathic doctor. And he is a raw food chef, teaches classes in natural health, hosts raw food retreats, and has been 100% raw vegan for over 6 years. He earned his BS in Business Administration from Towson University and his ND from the International Institute of from Oriental Medicine.
Original medicine?
Original. Yes. It is original. Okay, I thought it was a mistake. Thank you. In Brian's free time, he enjoys gardening, hiking, camping, biking, eating sprouts, and walking on the beach. Brian, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Vibhani. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. Where is that institute, the Natural Doctor Institute?
Oh, the International Institute of Original Medicine. Actually, the name comes from the fact that original medicine is the plants, the herbs mm-hmm. and the grasses and the vegetables and the food that we eat.
And where is that institute?
It's actually in Smithfield, Virginia.
Uh-huh. Amazing. I had never heard of it. That's great. Well, I first met you when I took your class last month or 2 months ago on sprouting. And it was so informative, and you were so clear and so delightful. I just knew I wanted to have you on to share some of your knowledge with all of my listeners. So I wanted to first, if you could just share with us a little bit of your history. How did you come to be a raw food vegan for so many years, and how did you find the Hippocrates Institute?
Sure. Well, 9 years ago, I was the shining example of fat, sick, and nearly dead. I had the worst health of anybody that I know all my life. I constantly would get sick with colds, flus, headaches, backaches, migraines. I was overweight, and, I had to wear glasses, and I was just taught that, that's the way life is, that some people are healthier than others, and that as we age, then our health slowly declines, constantly going downhill until the day we die. And I came from the corporate world, so, I spent all my life traveling and eating, what I was told was the best way to eat, in some of the best restaurants. And the food, I love food. I love to eat. It's just the food at that time did not love me back.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know there was another option until I heard a nutritionist speak, and he was vibrant. He was charismatic. He looked 20 years younger than he was. He had a great presentation, and he mentioned raw foods, which I'd never heard of before. And he said he went 100% raw for a year, and it was the most amazing thing that he had ever done in his life. And this kind of intrigued me because I just was slouched in my chair and I was thinking, whatever this guy is doing, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to give it a try. I decided to go, 100% raw, you know, for, actually I went slowly. I went vegetarian for 1 year, and then I went vegan for the next year. Then I went high raw for year three.
What did you do for year three?
High raw, which means about 75-80% raw foods.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Plant-based. And every step of the way, I noticed that I was getting more energy, I was losing weight, and my mental clarity was improving, my memory was improving, and I was getting sick less often. And so this began to interest me. So I turned off the reading light, and I turned off the TV, turned on the reading light, and I started reading everything I get my hands on that had to do with diet and its impact on health. And quite frankly, Bhavani, I was blown away by what I was reading. I was thinking, these people are either, pathological liars or they're insane.
Mm-hmm.
Because the stories that I was reading were stories of people healing themselves of chronic degenerative illnesses, impossible diseases that we're told cannot be cured with simply food. And so I decided, okay, well, I'm going to try to go 100% raw for 3 weeks. And it took me probably 6 months of failure before I got to the point where I could stick to it. And then after 3 weeks, it's difficult to get through that transition, but after 3 weeks, it becomes easy. It takes 3 weeks to develop a new habit. And the last 10% between 90% and 100% raw is not 10%. It actually is exponential. That's when the lights really come on, is when you make that last 10% leap. And it's like everything changed overnight, mind, body, and spirit. So not only did I lose 100 pounds, which I needed to lose, and, you know, I'm back down to the weight that I was when I was 15 years old, tons of energy, sickness is gone, backache's gone, headache's gone, migraine's gone, glasses gone, all of these things. So it's like getting an extreme body makeover from the inside out. And not only that, but your memory improves, all six senses improve. Your sight, your hearing, your taste, your touch, and everything. And also your sense of connectedness, awareness, and spirituality improves, which I did not expect in any of these things. And that's really the greatest reward. And so I don't say these things to brag. I say these things to share, that I believe that it's possible for anybody. And I've observed it happen over and over and over again with many different people. So I began to feel that, while I had a successful career, that the work that I was engaged in at the time in the corporate world was not my passion, was not my calling. And so I went back to school at night and, started studying evenings and weekends about nutrition, which really, really attracts me and really engages me. So what used to be hard became easy. You know, I never really enjoyed school very much until, you know, I found out what I believe is my true calling and my passion.
Mm-hmm.
So I earned first a degree as a certified nutritional counselor and then got a second bachelor's degree in nutrition and a master's degree, and then finally the naturopathic doctor certification. I opened up my own private practice back in Maryland, quit my job in the corporate world, making far less than I was in my new job, but it didn't matter, because when you are fulfilling your soul, then things really don't matter anymore, you know, accumulating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you, follow this path of this extreme health, then eventually you'll stumble across Hippocrates. Hippocrates mm-hmm. is the oldest continuously running wellness natural healing center in the world. We started back in 1956 in Boston by our founder, Anne Wigmore. And she had a similar story, even more amazing story of miraculous recovery and turnaround in her own life. And she began to share this knowledge, this information, and with first friends and neighbors, and then others from the outside came and experienced extreme recovery using natural methods. We moved from Boston in 1988 to West Palm Beach, Florida, to be in a warmer, a sunnier climate. And now we've grown to be the world's premier health encounter. And it's a 50-acre, immaculately manicured tropical oasis with fountains, statues, sculptures, and so on and so forth. We have 14 infrared saunas, 8 heated pools with using ozone and salt for purification, including a cold plunge and a mineral pool, steam rooms, saunas, and so on. So we have guests from all over the world come to this place to participate in our signature service, which is the 3-week life transformation program. It's an intensive immersion experience. We're primarily an educational center, so we don't we shy away from the idea that we heal anybody. Instead, we teach people how to help themselves by boosting the immune system. So mm-hmm. we've been studying food for a really, really long time. And we found that there's certain things in food that help to boost the immune system far better than anything else on this planet. And these, some of these things that are in food we're perfectly aware of, like vitamins and minerals. There are other things that we've discovered in food, like enzymes and oxygen and phytonutrients, which are more heat sensitive than the vitamins and minerals. So, but we take a holistic approach to natural healing, mind, body, and spirit. So it's not just the food, it's the exercise, it's pure water, sunshine, fresh air, getting adequate rest, positive thinking, a belief in a higher power, a spiritual outlook, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, it was the first time I was ever there when I went to your class, and I was amazed by the facility, the beauty, and the people there. I was definitely inspired. You know, I am also a foodie, and I love good food, and I love the social aspect of eating. You know, I'm also a slow food chapter leader. You know, and I love bringing people together around the table. And I would think for you that was probably one of the most challenging parts, making that transition, because when you start eating that way, you can't really go out and eat with people at a restaurant.
Oh, contraire.
Contraire?
contraire, yes. Absolutely, there are... It is a challenge, but there are options out there. You know, for example... you know, in New York City, you have Pure Food and Wine, you have Quintessence, you have Organic Avenue, you have, I think Bonobos used to be in operation. I don't know if there's still an operation there. There's at least a dozen gourmet raw food restaurants in Manhattan.
Oh, that, sure. Now there are. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. And there are more now than there used to be here in Florida, in West Palm Beach. You know, we have a place called Christopher's Kitchen, which it's not 100% raw, you know, but they specialize in organic. They have some really nice raw food choices. So my favorite there are the raw tacos. They also have raw pizza. These are 100% plant-based, 100% organic, and 100% raw.
Mm-hmm.
They also have... They have burritos, and tomorrow we're having tuna here at West Palm Beach. Last week we had pizza for lunch and tacos for dinner, spaghetti, you know, and these
now
are
all...
Now,
when you say tuna, you're having raw tuna, or you're not you're having a mock tuna?
Oh, it's a mock tuna, yeah.
Right,
we call it tuna,
right.
But it's, you know, it's basically nut-based and seed-based, so we're using sunflower seeds and macadamia nuts, and there's dill in there, there's onion and celery. And the way you, you know, basically prepare it, it tastes as good or better as its real animal counterpart.
Right, right.
Uh-huh. But instead of it not loving you back, it does love you back. You know,
right.
I like to say I love food, but now my food loves me back.
That's great. Yep, that's great. So let's talk about your specialty now. You've really focused in on sprouts as the garden manager at the Hippocrates Institute, and I was blown away by how many sprouts you said you grow weekly. You want to share that?
Yeah, sure. Well, here at Hippocrates, we grow all of the sprouts and all of the wheatgrass that we use here on campus for supplying the kitchen and the juice bar. And we have 150 guests on campus this week, and which is now is our peak season. We average around 120 for year long. We're open 365 days a year. And so wheatgrass is by far my largest sprout that I grow. And we just grow the wheatgrass for juicing, for supplying the juice bar here. And wheatgrass is our signature elixir here at Hippocrates. It's nature's finest medicine. It's a powerful, concentrated liquid nutrient. So it's like drinking liquid sunshine. Every time you drink a shot of wheatgrass, it's like getting a fresh blood transfusion. It's a complete food. It has all of the vitamins, all of the minerals, all of the protein, all of the essential fatty acids that you need to live on. But it is not only a powerful nutrient, but it's also a powerful detoxifier. So it helps to chelate, that is, extract poisons, pollutants, heavy metal toxins, and remove them out of your body. And unfortunately, we live in a polluted world. The air, the land, the water, the food is polluted just from human industry. And so we need to detoxify. And the soil is also depleted. So most of the food that's commercially distributed and sold in supermarkets and restaurants is depleted of essential vitamins and minerals and nutrients. So commercially distributed crops are on life support, you know, right, using lots and lots of synthesized fertilizer with just three things in it, NPK, nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus. Well, there's a total of 92 minerals that we need. And so where's the iron? Where's the calcium? Where's the magnesium? Where's the zinc? Where's the copper? And all those others, it's missing from our food. So this is why we need sprouts and why we need certainly to grow our own food, and we need to replenish the soil with the trace minerals. So the reason why sprouts are on average 20 times more nutritious than even the best raw vegetables that you can grow organically. 20 times. That's a crazy amount of nutrition. Each and every seed is a miracle. Every seed contains all the energy, all the DNA encoding that it needs to grow into a full adult plant or tree or bush someday. And the energy that's stored inside that seed explodes as they come to life when you apply water to them, just as happens in nature. The nutrient content in seeds reaches a peak concentration within the first 10 days of growth, and it never achieves that concentration of nutrients in the rest of its life. So that's why we use the sprouts. So that we grow, I grow a dozen different sprouts here, wheatgrass being number one, sunflower, pea shoots, buckwheat, radish, broccoli, clover, alfalfa, and mung beans, adzuki, and green lentils, red lentils, French lentils, and fenugreek. And so half of the diet while you're here on the program is sprouts. And then the rest of, well, what the rest of the diet looks like is we're 100% plant-based, 100% organic, 100% raw, and at least half living raw. So living raw means the sprouts. And when you start to talk about living foods, then that puts you in a whole other category, even above and beyond raw, because the sprouts are still growing at the time of consumption. They have that spark of life. They have that life force energy. And you're alive. The sprouts are alive. The more living foods you take into your body, the more alive you become, because life begets life. So the University of Vienna did a study recently on sprouts, and they found that sprouts are the only thing that can jumpstart dead cells back into life. And they also found that sprouts actually increase the electrical conductivity between the capillaries and your cells. And it's that electrical conductivity that allows the transmission of nutrients between your blood vessels and your cells. And it's also what allows the transfer of toxins out of your cells into back into your bloodstream and to your lymph system for removal out of this, out of the body. And your cells are constantly requiring nutrients in order for the mitochondria to work, and they're creating their own byproduct, their waste products that have to be removed out of the body. So sprouts facilitate that in a tremendous way.
Yeah, well, that's the information you were giving us. And, you know, when I got home, of course, I started sprouting, you know, certainly with the easiest one. I know you had, you separated it into different categories for us, which, you know, in the class really helped, you know, give you kind of a framework of what kind of commitment you were making and, you know, how to start. And I really would love to have you share some of that with everyone listening. But before we do, I'd like to take a couple-minute break. And when we come back, maybe we can go into some of the hows of sprouting. So maybe we can inspire some listeners to get started.
Okay.
Okay? All right, everyone, don't go anywhere. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green and my guest, Brian Hedrick from the Hippocrates Institute. Be right back. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Bhavani on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Brian Hedrick, the Greenhouse and Organic Garden Manager at the Hippocrates Institute. And we were just talking about sprouting and wheatgrass juice, and I asked him to share with us how the process of growing sprouts takes place. But before we do that, Brian, I wanted you to share with us, you said the wheatgrass juice, you grow the sprouts and you juice those, you don't eat them. Is there any other sprout that you grow that you recommend juicing as opposed to eating?
Oh, absolutely. Every time that you juice, then you concentrate the nutrients. And you also separate the indigestible fiber from the food that you're juicing. So the we also serve another green drink here at Hippocrates, which is half sprouts and half vegetables. The vegetables are organic cucumber, organic celery, and the sprouts are sunflower sprouts and pea shoot sprouts. And the reason why we use those particular sprouts is because they're so high in protein, and they're a complete food. So every time you drink a 12-ounce serving of a green drink made this way, it's like having a complete meal. And all of the nutrients, as I mentioned, are concentrated by the juicing process, including the protein. So that's like your protein drink.
Mm-hmm. And is there a difference between the juicers, you know, like a traditional juicer that spins it around as opposed to a cold-pressed juicer?
There is. You know, when you use a cold-pressed juicer, which is an auger-style juicer, slow-turning, using compression, then you preserve more of the nutrients. And there's many excellent designs out there, the Green Star, the Green Power, the Omega, the Angel. My favorite one is the Omega 8006. That's the one that I personally own and use in my home. I just find it easier to use, easier to clean than some of the others. If you have a Champion or a Jack LaLanne or a Breville, these are high-speed juicers that rely, instead of compression, they rely on shredding the vegetable to or the sprout in order to make juice, which oxidizes the juice much more quickly, and many of the nutrients are lost that way. But I like to say the best juicer in the world is the one that you already own. So you can, you know, just dust off the juicer that's been sitting in your cupboard for years and start using it, and you're going to be light years ahead of everybody else there on the planet. You know, eventually, you're going to, if you juice on a regular basis, especially green juices, and especially the sprout green juices, you're going to experience such an amazing transformation in your life that you're going to want to know what's next, and you're going to want to go to the next level. Because your doctor bills are going to go down, your energy is going to go up, your sick days are going to go away, you're going to be sleeping less, you're going to be sleeping better. Your mental clarity, as I mentioned, will improve, your memory improves, your energy will skyrocket, and these are things that, it's like finding a magic pill, the juicer. So the juicer I like to call my medicine cabinet. That's my pharmacy, you know, and that's what you rely on when, you know, if you do have a health challenge, or, you know, if you're exposed to a lot of people around you who are coughing, sneezing, or ill, then this is going to boost your immune system.
Mm-hmm. And do you recommend the kind of juicer that's an extraction versus like a Vitamix that keeps everything in there?
Well, I own a Vitamix. A Vitamix is actually not a juicer. It's a blender. And so you can make dressings, you can make smoothies in a Vitamix. I love my Vitamix, but it
but
really
it's different
doesn't do
than juicing.
Right, it's different from juicing. I use the Vitamix every day, but I also own a juicer, the Omega. Now you can, if you have a Vitamix and you don't have a juicer, you can actually still make juice in a Vitamix by first blending the vegetables and the sprout in the Vitamix, and then you pour the slurry into a nut milk bag, and then you hold, suspending the nut milk bag over a bowl, you know, you pull up the drawstring, and then you squeeze the juice out of the bag. So that's it's an extra step, you know, it's a two-step process, but it can be done.
Right, right, good.
The secret to juicing is that you have to drink it while it's fresh. And within 15 minutes of juicing to get the maximum amount of nutrients. Commercially distributed juice is nowhere near as good. Nothing comes close, in fact. We did a study when we were in Boston years ago with MIT, and we found that, for example, powdered and freeze-dried wheatgrass is only 2% as effective as fresh juiced wheatgrass.
Uh-huh.
Only 2%. So
right.
It's not even close. I mean,
right.
It's probably better than drinking Diet Coke, but so is probably drinking battery acid, you know, but nothing comes close to fresh juiced wheatgrass. The secret is that you have to learn how to grow the grass so that your wheatgrass juice comes out sweet and not bitter. And so there's some techniques that you can employ for doing that. The primary one is you harvest the wheatgrass while it's young, at the beginning of what we call the jointing stage. The jointing stage is when the wheatgrass is graduating from a baby into an adult. And the older that the wheatgrass gets, the more bitter it gets, kind of like us.
Mm-hmm.
Until we go raw, and then we get happy again.
Uh-huh.
So you harvest the wheatgrass while it's still young, and then you want to juice it while it's fresh. And you also don't want to grow your wheatgrass in the sunlight. You want to grow it indoors. You want plenty of indirect sunlight, but you don't want direct sunlight. And indoors allows you to do that, and your kitchen is the perfect place to grow your wheatgrass, because the lighting level in your kitchen is ideal for growing wheatgrass. The kitchen is the best well-lit room in the house by design, because that's where we prepare our meals. It gives you about 1,000-foot candles, which is what you need for growing wheatgrass, and all the sprouts, in fact. But you also need to grow your sprouts between 65 and 75 degrees. And less than 50% humidity, which is about how we prefer to keep our homes. You know, most people prefer to keep it, you know, around 70 degrees in the winter, 75 in the summertime, and that's what the sprouts like.
Mm-hmm.
And you also want to grow in your kitchen because you want to make this convenient. You want to make this the new centerpiece of your life. Remember, you're going to be soaking and you're going to be rinsing on a regular basis, so you need to be close to the sink. Mm-hmm. And by being in the kitchen, this is where we tend to congregate, you know, where the traffic flows. So this way you don't forget about the sprouts. And you remember to when it's time to water. And, you know, when it's time to eat, then they're right there in front of you, too. You know, so the best place to grow is indoors, not in the shed, not in the garage, not in the basement, not in the greenhouse, for those reasons.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of seeds do you use for wheatgrass? I mean, is it red winter wheat or?
Well, there's a thousand different varieties of grasses, and the one that works best for wheatgrass is called red hard winter wheat berries. They also make a spring, summer, and fall wheat, which doesn't work as well, and they make a soft wheat, and they make a white wheat, all of which don't work as well. So red hard winter wheat berries, and you'll find the seeds at any hardcore health food store. Wheatgrass juice has been the number one health food supplement for the last 80 years. And we have Ann Wigmore to thank for making wheatgrass juice popular. She didn't really discover it. I mean, the grasses have been used really since the beginning of time. We have records going back 3,000 years to the time of Hippocrates himself. Hippocrates was a Greek physician that lived about 3,000 years ago. And he's considered the father of modern medicine because he was the first one that postulated that illness was not the result of evil spirits, but it was the result of lifestyle choices, the way we live and how we eat. And so he ushered in, you know, the kind of brought us out of the dark ages when it comes to medicine. So that's he's our namesake of this mm-hmm. institute here, and he
so you
also
can use, you can use the red winter wheat berries that you can buy in bulk at Whole Foods.
Or you, if the Whole Foods that you lives that operates close by where you live, if they carry red hard winter wheat berries, then yeah, by all means, you might have to experiment, shop around a little bit, and try different sources to get the best results, because not all seeds are created equal.
Right.
Even the ones that are called red hard winter wheat berries, they come from, you know, different sources all over the country, and some will simply perform better than others. Mm-hmm. But that's a good starting point to start mm-hmm. with. And of course, you can find them online. We sell them here at the store, you know, and we ship, you know, if you want to order them here
uh-huh.
to your U.S. address.
And if you're gluten-free, can you drink wheatgrass juice?
Absolutely. And the reason why is because the stage that we use the wheatgrass, it's still a vegetable. It's not yet a grain. It does not develop the gluten protein until much later in its life. So wheatgrass juice is totally gluten-free. If you have wheat sensitivities or gluten allergies, you can still do wheatgrass without a problem at all.
Oh, that's great, because I'm sure many people listening, that would be a question for them.
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question.
Yeah, so wheatgrass was one of the category threes, though, in our class. So it's a little bit more complicated. Can you share with us how to grow the wheatgrass? You do that in soil, right?
Sure. Well, I like to divide sprouts into three different categories. First, there's the beans and legumes, which are the easiest of the sprouts to grow. And then there's the leafy sprouts, which include things like alfalfa and clover and broccoli and radish and onion, garlic, and cabbage, which we also grow hydroponically, but they take a little bit longer, and you need to allow a greening stage for the leafy sprouts. And then there's the tray sprouts, and the tray sprouts that I grow here include wheatgrass and sunflower and pea shoots and buckwheat. And I choose those four because those are the most nutritious. Not all sprouts are created equal. Mm-hmm. So the beans and legumes are 10 times more nutritious than the best raw vegetables that you can grow organically. Leafy sprouts are 20 times more nutritious because now we're developing the chlorophyll in the leaf, so there's more nutrients. The tray sprouts, the last four that I mentioned, wheatgrass, pea shoots, buckwheat, and sunflower, are 30 times more nutritious. But we grow those in soil, and mm-hmm. and so it's the earth that conveys that next level, that higher degree of nutrition to the sprouts. So you want to use organic potting mix for growing, you know, your tray sprouts, and you want to start with trays that have holes in them, so that.
Ooh, I think we lost Brian. Brian, are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Okay, good. Yeah, I can hear you now. Lost
you
for
okay.
a minute. Okay, so I got up to, you start with a tray that has holes in the bottom.
Yeah, you use trays that have holes in the bottom, which means you need some sort of a rack system with a drain pan on the bottom. Or if you're just growing single trays, you can put a drain pan on the counter, on the kitchen counter, and then put the tray directly on top of that with some sort of a spacer to make sure that the tray is not sitting in its own drain water. And that's
right.
also the reason for using potting mix, is to make sure that the tray is well drained and that it doesn't have any standing water in the bottom of the tray.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything starts with soaking. Regardless of the type of sprout that you're going to grow, you soak, and different seeds require different soaking times. So for wheatgrass, you soak the seeds for 8 hours, 1 cup of seeds, and then you drain. And you rinse twice a day for the next 36 hours, so just 3 rinses 12 hours apart. At the end of 36 hours, then the seed will begin to germinate. You'll start to see the root popping out, and that's when it's time to plant. So you prepare your tray with a half inch of potting mix and tap it down lightly, you know, to compress it. An empty tray on top works well for this. And then you sort of pre-moisten the potting mix by misting, and then you spread the seeds that are germinated lightly, gently, across the top of the soil, filling the four corners of the tray. So 1 cup of seeds will yield about 1.5 cups, which is the perfect amount for a 10-inch by 10-inch square tray.
Mm-hmm.
And then you mist again, and then you cover with an empty tray. And then you simply water twice a day for the next 7 days. And the
so
cover tray.
Do you put soil on top of the seeds or no?
No soil on top of the seeds. The cover tray, the empty cover tray sort of acts like a light layer of soil without the mess. And the purpose of the cover tray is to prevent the seeds from drying out too quickly. You don't ever want them to dry out. So you water twice a day, and you remove the cover tray to water, and then you put it back. By day four, then the roots will be long enough that they'll be down in the bottom of the tray, and they'll be protected by the moisture in the soil. At that point, you don't need the cover tray anymore. So keep watering twice a day for a total of 7 days, and grown under these conditions, you'll have a beautiful crop of wheatgrass, and you'll get about 10 ounces of juice out of a 10-inch by 10-inch square tray like that. You'll get better at it over time. Your first attempt, you might not quite get that yield, and it also depends on the type of juicer you're using. Some are just more efficient than others. And then you harvest the entire tray at the beginning of the jointing stage. This is when you see a second blade of grass emerge from the base of the plant. And what you don't use right away, you can store in the refrigerator for up to 5 days in a green bag or in some other food storage container. But fresh is best. So you want to grow small batches at a time and juice it as quickly as possible from the time of harvesting.
Right. So like every 5 days or so, start a new tray.
Exactly. Yeah. So it will become a rotation.
Right.
The easiest of the sprouts to grow are the beans and the gooms.
Well, Brian, we're just about out of time, so I would love, can you share with people your contact information if they have any questions, or if you have a book or someplace that they can get this information, you can share that with them.
Sure. My email address is BHETRICH@HippocratesInst.org. That's the best way to reach me because I'm never near the phone. I did publish a book called Natural Vibrant Health Raw Food. It's on Amazon. And it's basically my favorite 65 or so raw food recipes, if you're interested. And tells a little bit about my story and a little bit about raw foods, the benefits. Where do you get your protein? Where do you get your calcium?
Great. Thank you so much. You are doing such awesome work. I thank you on behalf of everybody whose life you're changing. Thanks. And everyone out there listening, thank you for joining us. And I'll be with you again next week. Have a great rest of the week. Bye.